Hello, homies, and welcome to Easily Entertained with Maddie McLean. You guessed it. I'm Maddie McLean. It is somehow still Halloween week. It just feels like it's been a month or it's been a long road. But I don't intend to be a Grinch. It's just It's stretched on. You know what I'm saying? I know that Halloween will re-get its sparkle, like when you have little ones, little kiddos, and they're all excited and dressed up. Turns out also I was all prepped and ready to dish out my candy, and nobody came. And mind you, my doorbell's also broken. That could be a factor. But I set out my bowl of candy, and I don't think anybody took it, so I really had a lot of candy to myself, and it's very sad. I learned, though, that this is common, because now what the kids are doing these days is trunk or treating, which I guess came out of necessity during COVID times, but has stuck. And it's just where cars line up, you know, maybe from the same school or the kids play class. I don't know. And people line up and they trick or treat out of the trunk of their cars and hand out candy to little kiddos. It just doesn't have the same effect. I mean, I suppose that works out better for parents, but I don't know. It seems to me like a very sad, sad tradition that is just kind of being wilted down. But you know what? That's fine. My season for those, it sounds like I hate Halloween. I don't. I do enjoy Halloween. Don't get me wrong. But my season, my Roman Empire, my Super Bowl, my quest for purpose, I don't know, is Christmas. So as this Halloween season comes to an end, it simply means that mine is coming. It's on its way. But we're not there yet. We're not there yet. So we'll spend a quick hot little minute about Halloween, seeing as we're still here. But I'm not the only one in thinking that Halloween has lasted forever. It just seems a little bit extra this year, because according to Axios, I hope I'm saying that right. I've always said Axios in my mind anyway. They did a study that it is true that this year, quote, what they say is costume obsession fuels record Halloween spending. And what they say here is America's love of costumes is driving Halloween spending to new highs, according to the National Retail Federation's annual holiday survey. So according to said survey, total Halloween spending, so that's costumes, home decor, and candy itself and all that good shit, is projected to reach a $12.2 billion, up from last year's $10.6 billion. Mind you, 12.2 and 10.6 don't seem crazy different, but we're talking billions, you know, big dogs, big bees, baby. And a record number or percentage, which is 73%, will participate in Halloween-related activities this year. From that said survey, there was 8,084 consumers that were surveyed. And this year's 73 is up from last year's 69 and 72% in 2017. So the last highest was 2017. I mean, I think this can be explained in quite a few ways. Oh, by the way, costumes account for the largest increase. That's where we're seeing it the most. Outside of the economical, you know, just fact that inflation is at an all-time high, I'm pretty sure. And everything just costs a lot more. Like breathing in air, existing as a human being is just, the rent is too damn high. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But honestly, I will say, I think everybody showed up and showed out this year, that it showed itself. The facts and figures, that makes sense to me, because I feel like everybody decided, and we were talking about this at a Halloween party, everybody collectively decided that this is the year we go all out. You know, I think it's the shout out to Victoria. Hey, girl. She said, you know, it's every third year that you go hard. Well, for me, it was not this year. I usually, you know, I want to be that person, but that requires planning ahead. And sometimes planning ahead in me, a toxic kind of tumultuous relationship me and planning ahead have. I went as a cat, a black cat, no less. I did have a, you know, cat suit, a jumpsuit, but it was just black, you know, little flirty kitty, if you will. And I did wear black cowboy boots. So that was my really weak attempt at Puss in Boots too, maybe. I don't know. It can be what you want it to be, but I digress. So of course, we can't talk about Halloween without talking about the queen of Halloween herself, and that is Miss Heidi Klum. So for years, she has really done the most, and I mean that literally, when it comes to Halloween. Most memorably, or rather, it also was the most recent besides this year, she was a worm, like a, I guess a lake worm or something, and you cannot, all you see are her little eyes poking out of this huge, looks like a booger, like a giant booger. The number or amount, I guess, of prosthetics that are used in all of her collective costumes has got to be a wild number. But this year, in her annual Halloween party, she dressed up as a big giant peacock. She had the help of Cirque du Soleil dancers who acted as her wings and stuff. So there were probably eight or so other and did this human pyramid and this huge performance. And she has like the prosthetic kind of peacock head, face, and beak and stuff. I wouldn't say it's her best, but it's pretty sick. And she probably got somewhat of a break from all the prosthetics. Looks pretty cool. Honorable mention, let's talk about some good celeb costumes this year. Why don't we? So we have to give a major up to Alix Earle. She really, everyone was saying this in the comments of her TikToks, because that is, of course, where I witnessed this, is she was the Ice Queen from Narnia. And she's this giant gown and huge, like, trailing fur coat. And she went all out with the hair. Like, hair looks like it must weigh 50 pounds. And the icicle crown. She did a great job, I have to say. She looks really good. And it's not like you kind of expect, which I guess she did do. And she's growing up. I mean, she's in her early 20s. And, you know, typically most in their early 20s go for the sexy, like, vampire or like lingerie fit, really. But, and I kind of would have pegged her for that, honestly. No hate. But no, she didn't do that. She went all out, and I respect her for that. There are a few other ones that I took note of. We got Jerry O'Connell, who, he was on The View, I think. He dressed up as Post Malone, and it was quite good. Look, you should look it up. I do feel like Post Malone is probably one of those lasting costumes. You know, he's just got that iconic, unique look, to say the least, that I think will still work. Like, our kids might dress up as Post Malone. Do you ever think about that? Of like the ones that will stay, the costumes that won't, like from previous years, you know, like Marilyn Monroe, she's staying, all this. But anyways, people are getting more creative. So who's to say? TikTok really showed up and showed out too. A lot of memes or like cultural moments that I personally liked. Paris Hilton dressed up as Britney Spears in her Toxic music video. Looked great, does great. Historically, Paris Hilton has actually been a good friend of Britney's throughout the whole, the breakdown in the public sphere of her obvious conservatorship and all of that. And I think she's one of the good ones. At least in her memoir, I didn't see anything come out that shit talks her. So I think she's safe. What else? Ed Sheeran dressed up as Chucky, which was eerily not far off. Love the man, but it's almost, I guess he's self-aware. Not that he always looks like Chucky, but like, that's a good one to do for the sake of not having to use prosthetics and stuff to look like the character. yeah. And then, of course, I feel like the celebs this year dressed up maybe three or four times. So there's just so many renditions and iterations. And of course, when I see MGK, Machine Gun Kelly, and Megan Fox, If they could wear fake blood all over themselves and stuff and dress all spooky like that every single day, I think that would be their vibe. I think they would do it. If they wouldn't be committed by loved ones for doing so, I think they would. I mean, they like share or have a vial of each other's blood. Like, yeah. Maybe Jennifer's body wasn't too far off, huh? Anyways, I enjoy seeing the creativity that I did not share this year. My best was probably being Billie Eilish in her music video. Maybe I'll post that on the Instagram for your viewing pleasure, but that's about as good as it got. One year, this was early on when Blue Ivy was born. I was Blue Ivy. Nobody knew who I was. I was trying to be too with it. You know what I mean? I like wore a blue outfit basically and had Ivy wrapped around me and then like a fake sucker. What's it called? What are the little kids? Pacifiers. Yeah, I had a pacifier. I ended up having to write Blue Ivy in Sharpie across my chest. So it's kind of like having to explain a joke to somebody, you know, it's no longer a joke. It's just poorly worded. But you know what? We all have our years, and maybe next year will be my third year. You know what I'm saying? We did also, though, Kendall Jenner was Marilyn Monroe. She rocked it. Kendall Jenner, pretty much Hailey Bieber, Kendall Jenner, all of them. I guess you know what I'm talking about. The Nepo babies, they're usually quite good at Halloween this year. I will say Kendall's Marilyn Monroe was great. But I have to say, right now, currently, as per usual, but extra so, currently, the Kardashian-Jenners are putting on some sort of, I don't know, public relations onslaught because there is simply so much going on with them this week. First off, their business is booming, as they say. Kylie Jenner just launched her new clothing line called Kai, K-H-Y, her nickname, today, if you're listening to this now, November 1st. And if it weren't for her captions on her video, I have to say it's a beautifully shot video, her ad campaign, but I would have zero clue what it was that she was selling if it weren't for her caption. But yeah, so it is a clothing line that is dropping basics. Beautiful basics is kind of what they said, or simple. I don't know. So they're calling them drops. So I guess that means they'll have multiple drops because there are only currently 12 pieces total, I think. They look to be all leather, faux leather pieces. It looks cute. And what the Kardashian-Jenners do really well is inclusivity in terms of sizing, in makeup, shades, for all kind of shades of skin. They do really well with that. And, you know, it's just, yeah. And we'll get to that too, because there's more with Skims and such. But I don't know. I think that really helps them. That really works on their favor. And they've got a great business team because their dynasty just keeps going and going and going and going and going. But I checked it out. They're pretty cute. There is a good range of sizes in Kai. And people are saying, though, that I did a little deep dive, you know, as one does, looking up Kai, and Kylie Jenner has been touched by what people are calling the Timothy Chalamet effect. And that is, you know, he's a sensitive soul. He's a Pisces, Timothy Chalamet. He's played a lot of these roles too in the movies, specific Call Me By Your Name, for instance, or I mean, now he's in Dune and stuff, but regardless, you know, he's not the buff jock, you know, if we're going to go ahead and shrink everything down to these kind of digestible stereotypes here for the purpose of this, of said Timothy Chalamet effect, but you know, he's the sensitive artist. He's the edgy, artsy indie boy. And you can kind of see that in Kylie Jenner. I think all of the Kardashian Jenners do this, like take on the personalities of their boyfriends or their partners and like become that. Like how Kourtney Kardashian is turned into like a motorcycle biker, like edgy chick, you know, now that she's married to Travis Barker. Anyways, but for Kylie, she's like a lot more natural aesthetic going on. And I'm never one to hate on anybody who wears a lot of makeup. I do. I find it fun. I think that there's an art to it. You know, I think that there's a time and a place and yada yada. All that to say, she's just wearing less makeup, maybe getting less filler or something. I don't know. But she just seems chiller. Like all of her posts on her Instagram have seemed more chill, relaxed, Kylie. So people are saying that she's doing that with Timothy. And you can kind of see it in the ad campaign. But another lady in the fam that has big things going on is, it was just announced that Kim Kardashian's Skims just entered into official partnership with the NBA, the WNBA, and USA Basketball as the official underwear partner. If you didn't know that that was a position waiting to be filled, now you do. But that had to have been a very, very expensive, valuable transaction that just went down, because as of October 26th, Skims launched their men's line. So that's kind of following in line with that. And after, I guess, in the same time frame as Skims did launch their men's line, they're valued at an estimated $4 billion with a B. So that's pretty wild. And just for an idea of how much money is floating around in the NBA, if you're not as familiar like myself, don't worry, I looked into it for you. So the number one, all of the teams are owned by separate owners, right? And the NBA is formed by all of those owners of the teams. So like not one person necessarily owns the NBA, if that makes sense. So the richest owner is Steve Ballmer, who owns the Los Angeles Clippers at $100 billion. He was also the former Microsoft CEO. So that's probably also something major to do with it. But just to give you a sense of all the money that's just being whipped around. I'm not sure why I used that phrasing there. But yeah, so historically, Nike has been the biggest kind of advertiser, had the longest standing relationship with the NBA. We'll see if that changes anything. It's yet to be seen. I mean, I think Nike has gone through some things, isn't like the most unproblematic company, you know? So maybe this is helping. And I think there is through line, that's it, of diversity and inclusion lines up with Skims and NBA. And I mean, get that bag, bitch. Get that bag. I think it's a good move. It's kind of pop culture relevant. I don't know. The NBA and the Kardashians also historically don't have a great relationship. You know, we've got the Kardashian curse, i.e. Tristan Thompson, Khloe's ex, you know. It's interesting that after all that, knowing that there's, quote, the Kardashian curse, that they still do it. Then you got like Chris Humphries, you know, all those peeps. And of course, Lamar Odom. Cannot forget Lamar Odom. We'll see. And maybe Kim's going to be dating an NBA player again. Who's to say? There's just another business under their belt. And you would think that with the sheer volume of brands and businesses and enterprises that the Kardashian-Jenner family enters into, that they're all bound to have some sort of like chain restaurant type vibe or energy to them, but they're not. The thing is, like, Skims is great. Some of the best undergarment, whatever, some of the best shit in the game, like Spanx and Skims, you know. Spanx was kind of out there on its own running the show for a while until Skims came through. So kudos. Good American is good. One of my favorite jeans I wear all the time. Anyway, however, I must say one thing you must run to the internet and look up is the nipple bra from Skims. I thought this was a joke. I thought there's no way, but April Fool's isn't for a while. So I looked it up. They are indeed selling a bra. Skims is selling a bra with like nipples, like in the bra, like it pokes out like a nipple does in the bra, so that you can have that look without, like, while still wearing a bra. And as a as a member of the Big Titty Committee, grass is always greener, honey. Grass is always greener. It makes me laugh that people still want to do that, push it up and have a nipple show. It's like, most of the time, I'm just trying to, like, not flaunt, you know? But you can wear the most conservative looking thing and still somehow look a little risque when you have big titties. Anyways, that's a real thing. So if you want to have that nipple look, you can. The reasoning was some climate change thing, like it's harder to get your nipples hard. I don't know. I mean, I don't seem to have a problem with that, but anyways, we're going to quit talking about my nipples. And now for a little bit of reality catch up. Let's talk about what's been going on in Bachelor Nation. So if you have not yet made it up to right up until Hometowns, because that is the upcoming or the latest episode that I've not yet watched. So if you have watched up until then, you're good. If not, you might want to skip through because spoiler alert. We're going to talk about it, this and Bachelor in Paradise. So I'll put in the show notes where you can skip through to and so you won't get spoiled. Or rather, you're allowed to be as spoiled as you want, but the show won't be spoiled. That's what I mean. Okay, somehow we have already made it to Hometowns in Golden Bachelor. And that is crazy that we're down to the final three ladies. I think Bachelor producers or whatever kind of played it a little bit safe, which makes sense, I suppose. But seeing that Golden Bachelor is only it's normal an hour versus the regular 2 hours that the Bachelor will put us through. And it seems like there are, I have not triple checked on this, but it just seems to be a lot less episodes of this season. There were less women to begin with, but I have a strong feeling that it might not be the same way because it's definitely, I feel like it has yet to be confirmed, but I feel like the Golden Bachelor franchise is going to keep going. And I think that this is just the beginning. I do still want there to be a Golden Bachelor in Paradise. So let's make it happen, right? Like April, who has left a few episodes ago or the previous one. She's hilarious. She was the most for sure big personality, big, I don't know, just hilarious, an entertainer, a showman, if you will. That's a play on Real Housewives. But anywho, so I digress. So before we watch the latest episode from last week, there were six ladies: Teresa, Ellen, Susan, Sandra, and Leslie. So Teresa is the small little gal who has a strong connection with Gary, and Kathy, the Golden Bachelors, just decided to make her the villain because I say that lightly because she really wasn't. Zip it was like the biggest thing she said, but they had to have something, you know. And kudos, she's an Austin family, so hey, what's up, girl? She's not a villain, but anyways, she is in the show. This was her nemesis. So Teresa, Ellen is a sweet older lady. They're all sweet older ladies. The worst. She is bright blonde white hair. And she's really sweet. She's the big, huge about pickleball. If you watch the show, that will separate her, you know, contrary to popular belief. Susan, who looks just like Kris Jenner. She's sweet. She's there. She seems to be like the mama, but like everybody likes her, like the glue of the season, at least the girls in the mansion. Sandra, woman from Atlanta who missed her daughter's wedding to be on The Bachelor. I think everybody's talked about this, but I have to chime in on this because you bet your ass that my mother is required to be at my wedding. She's also married to my dad, so like this wouldn't be a problem, but I'm just playing hypotheticals here, okay? Yeah, no. We're the type of people that it's birthday month, so if you apply that energy to most holidays or outings, especially things that have to do with ourselves, like a wedding, that would, no, not be chill. And I don't think that Gary loved it either. They FaceTimed her daughter during the date and whatnot, but it was still weird. So I kind of feel like he had to keep her. Sorry, we're still going. And then lastly, number six that's left on this, the most recent episode, is Leslie, who is the quote sexy dancer. She's the one who has at least said that Prince wrote a song about her. She's my personal favorite. I don't know if they'll end up, she and Gary are necessarily the most, I don't know. I like her a lot. They have a good connection, and Gary seems the most like, woo, excited about her. But he also seems to be picking off the big personalities throughout the season. So we shall see. But I love her. She's sweet. So we get into the episode, and we start off with a one-on-one with Faith, who actually had the very first one-on-one beginning of the season. She was kind of feeling a little bit neglected or just wondering, and apparently so did Gary. So he took her on the one-on-one, as he said that she's actually a big question mark, at least at that time. And it was a great day. They took a helicopter ride, got to do it on The Bachelor, and landed that helicopter on a yacht and had a date on a yacht and looked glamorous and lovely. And of course, they flew over the mansion to make everybody jealous, and people are having a hard time with that, understandably, but whatever. And, you know, the spark ends up being right there still with Faith. We learn a little bit more about Faith and that she was actually homeless as a teen, which is just totally bonkers to learn about. You know, you make so many judgments and assumptions based off your experience is or imagined to be with somebody that may look that way, you know, and how we're, I feel like 9 times out of 10, just so wrong. But I mean, that's a human thing to do. That's what we do. That's how we survive. I digress. Gary gives her the rose and she makes it. So she is now officially, Faith is one of 3 places to go to hometowns. And 3 is 1 less than 4, which is usually the amount that go to hometowns or go on that episode, at least in other Bachelor seasons. Competition is on. And we move on to the group date. And around this time, something that is similar and seen on every season is the tensions are reaching and high as things are getting a little bit serious. And they all kind of do seem, for the most part, to have strong connections with Gary. But we shall see, right? We go to the group date, which is at the Santa Monica Pier. That's a lot lamer than the date that Faith got, but they all had their moments with Gary. And just a reminder of who's on this group date now. The ladies that are on this one-on-one date are Teresa, Ellen, Susan, Sandra, and Leslie. And actually, quite a few amount of these women really let Gary know that their feelings are developing into love, including Ellen, who lets him know this. Teresa kind of so much as says this. I think that Leslie kind of has this moment too. She lets him know how hard it was. And then he actually does not end up giving out a rose on the group date because it's too hard of a decision. And seeing Gary struggle with it, I actually like, you know, you want to protect this man's. So it's sad. It's hard to see him like that. But he doesn't give out a rose. And so we cut to the rose ceremony. And the kind of shocking send home was Ellen. I thought that Ellen was going to end up definitely in hometowns, if not be maybe the final two, but Ellen got sent home, and Gary did say that this was the hardest goodbye to her. Walks her out. Susan, Kris Jenner, and Sandra, woman who missed her daughter's wedding, they also are sent home. So that means that Teresa, Faith, and Leslie are the final 3 ladies. So we shall see what goes down. Curious to see if they'll have like a women tell all, if it'll come before the finale or what's going to happen, but we will find out soon enough. So let's jump on over to the other side of the coin of Bachelor Nation these days, which is Bachelor in Paradise. And another week, and lo and behold, relationship musical chairs ensues and is being played left and right. Most surprisingly and notably, as we are now rooting for Brayden, the earring-donning, very San Diego villain from Charity's season, and Rachel, the former Bachelorette. These two have a great relationship. They go on a date the previous episode, and at least from all the filming that Rachel has been on with The Bachelor, never seen her laugh and be so happy and like smiley the whole time. Kind of, I'm here for it. So I hope they last. And I also feel like just in general, the public is very hard on Rachel, and I don't know why. I think she's great. Team Rachel. Okay. And let's also, like, why are we hating on her? Let's remember why Rachel and Gabby became co-bachelorettes, because of the way that Clayton dumped them. And for those that don't know, Rachel and Gabby, and there was a third girl, were the final of Clayton's season, The Bachelor. He tells them in a group that he's in love with the girl who already had left, even though he told them both he loves them and convinced them to stay after Susie. It was a mess. Okay. So not a huge fan of Clayton, who also found himself the center of this baby daddy drama where some girl who stayed anonymous claimed that she was having his baby and that he wouldn't pay for anything, or was, you know, leaked text between the two of them where he's like, there's no way we didn't hook up. But she's like, we did. This is all becoming public. And she, like, I think, like, may have started to sue him or something. But he told her to get a paternity test, which already feels like, it felt like we shouldn't be watching this. It was very Maury, that, you know, TV show-esque. Anyways, I digress. Enough about Clayton. Back to Bachelor in Paradise. The other notable things that's going down for you to get caught up, if you would like, up until this next episode, is that Jess and the Glitter Girl, she's a petite little blonde girl who loves Taylor Swift and is known for wearing body glitter. And Blake Moynes, who is the Batch Nation 3-timer, who's been on just a lot of seasons, that we ended up really liking, though, even though that's, you know, a little bit of a red flag moment there. But Jess and Blake were hitting it off and were kind of a couple since the show began. But it's looking like they're probably not together anymore. Jess wanted to explore the relationships, but she was crying because she didn't want to hurt him. But Blake was a really good dude about it. It made me like him even more, but also just sad. Like, I want him to find his gal, you know? And looks like Jess is really interested in Tyler. Tyler, who was on Rachel's season. It's all, you know, how it is. Bachelor Nation, a little incesty without being incesty. Just a lot of... Anyways, all right. We also, later in the most recent episode, received a little bit of a rando from Bachelor Nation, which is Sam from Bachelor in Paradise Canada, to shake things up. Things were getting a little too peaceful in Paradise, you know what I mean? Outside of Kat's crazy, either if it's crazy editing, I don't know. She seems like she might just be this crazy. It was her birthday, and birthdays don't go well on The Bachelor in Paradise. I would hate it, it sounds like, because on her birthday, the guy she was coupled up with ends up going on a date with somebody else and basically does exactly what she did to Brayden earlier in the season. So, you know, you don't feel that bad for her. It was coordinated beautifully. Excellent work, producers. Excellent work. And then I have to add this part in. I had a little blast from the past because for whatever reason, this is a nostalgic show for me, even though it's like not that old. Dancing with the Stars. You know, I forgot how engrossing it is. I put it on the background, the latest episode, watching live TV. Weird. Found myself just stopped working on my laptop, just mouth kind of like sort of open, staring at the TV. The engrossed face was happening, but it was good. I saw Ariana Madix just eating up the dance floor. She's great, and the judges think so too. And speaking of Bachelor Nation, Charity Lawson is also doing really well in the show. And then you've got Harry Jowsey from Too Hot to Handle and his partner Riley Arnold, who's the professional dancer. And they're not great, but it was sad to see. He seemed like they'd both been like crying or like upset because people on social media are talking about how terrible of dancers, or a dancer that he is, and that she's dancing around him or whatever, which was endearing. So good job on his PR team for having him do this show. Very interesting. Another maybe cast of characters that you might know and recognize is Mauricio Umansky, who was sort of Kyle Richards from Real Housewives of Beverly Hills' husband. He's been on the show with her for 9 years, for pretty much since Beverly Hills of Real Housewives had launched. And they had always been the strong married couple. The relationship you got to see over the period of years it's a lot. It's a long span of time. They have lots of kids together. I think something like 4 together. And then Kyle has 2 other kids from previous marriage. But Kyle and Mauricio, they are separated. And this all kind of came out leading up until the latest Real Housewives of Beverly Hills premiere of the latest season this past week, actually. So some people have speculated that this is just to drum up drama and get people to tune in, but it seems pretty real to me. The part that's not so real was that for a while, all of these photos were coming out and paparazzi and stuff of Kyle Richards with musician Morgan Wade, who's like this hot lesbian singer. And people were like, are they a thing? Are they an item? And they kind of played into it and did this music video together that Kyle Richards was in of Morgan's. So this had all gone down over the summer. Like, that part is probably not true. Who knows? Because they did, at least in a sneak peek, we see that they get tattoos. No, Morgan Wade got a tattoo with Kyle Richards, either name or initials. So interesting. All to say, we shall find out. Beverly Hills, if you are not or are looking to start a season of Real Housewives, Beverly Hills is one of my very, very favorites. I also love Orange County is great. A classic is New York. I would start in the early ones, though, because New York is the OG Real Housewives, but they just started over with a completely new cast of characters, or really they're not characters, I suppose, but this last year. So I don't know so much about this new one, but in Salt Lake City has been great. That one I dragged my heels on, but it's a good one too. Really, Bravo is having a big week this week. There's a lot of premieres. Southern Charm is going on, and there's a lot of controversy or kind of a big dramatic moment there that resembles that of Scandoval from Vanderpump Rules. There's, you know, we're still in a dead season for that. But when Tom Sandoval has started his own podcast, and I'm curious, but I don't want to give him that listen, you know? I'm conflicted. Do I do it for research purposes? For this podcast or no? You let me know if you feel strongly. Strongly tell me. I mean, politely, but you know what I mean. So, whew. And it's also BravoCon, which I will go to one of these days. And that's essentially, like it sounds, a convention for Bravo. Bravo Universe has become a power to be reckoned with, really. And I've always been into Bravo, honestly. That's like, mostly the reason that I had live TV was to just like put on Bravo, if I'm being honest. But if somebody else asked me, I was trying to be cool, I'd say like live sports too, you know. But yeah, that's what it's really for. And a big expose has come out that I will be doing a full episode on called The Real Housewives Reckoning, which has basically been Bethany Frankel of OG Real Housewives of New York. Her soapbox, if you will. It's basically the most surface level TLDR of it is that she's wanting to form a union for reality show casts and to better protect them for being, you know, manipulated and coerced and all this, you know, all the shit that we've seen, especially recently, come out in reality shows like Love is Blind and all those lawsuits and such. So it's a read. It's a full editorial kind of Vanity Fair article. So that's definitely going to be covered because that's big. And curious to see what goes down there. But that's just something to look forward to. And lastly, I mean to leave it on this note, but, you know, a big, big central icon of American and really global now pop culture, Matthew Perry, has passed away at the age of 54. And the whole world collectively felt that one. It's really sad, especially because of his very recently released memoir, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing, that he released last year in 2022, that really, he opened up about his struggles with addiction. He's addicted to alcohol as well as opiates. It all kind of began, let's see, I pulled up a New York Times has kind of, whenever something big happens, they collect all these articles that relate to it. So it's helpful to kind of get an overview of an issue, not issue, you know what I mean. So this is what I'm getting this from. As we know, or at least the latest that we know about the cause of death, is that he passed away in his hot tub and he was found by his assistant who had left to go run a few errands for him. She came back and found him drowned in the hot tub, which is awful and particularly spooky and just sad because his last Instagram post was of him sitting in the very spot that he died in his jacuzzi, saying how much, you know, oh, this makes you happy. And it's just really weird. It's bizarre. It's always crazy to me. Like, why does that happen in life? You know, it's especially tough to swallow because he had just released this memoir and had just really found a place in his life that he could open up and talk about how big of a struggle. And, you know, when you're an addict and you're dealing with something like that, it's something you deal with for the rest of your life. The way that he opened up and talked about his troubles and his struggles is something to be admired. And I think that what he really wanted too was to hopefully help somebody else, that if they're dealing with this, that if he comes out here and is just raw and real about what it looks like and how easily you can fall into that, on a background of the struggles that he faced. And I'm reading this from New York Times, is a jet ski accident in 1997 is what helped set in motion Mr. Perry's addiction to painkillers. A year and a half later, he was taking 55 pills a day. He checked into a rehab facility weighing 128 pounds. Of course, Matthew Perry is in rehab became a huge news story, he wrote. In the years to come, his addiction would lead to, quote, a medical odyssey, the New York Times wrote in a profile last year, including an exploded colon, a stint on life support, 2 weeks in a coma, 9 months with a colostomy bag, and more than a dozen stomach surgeries, among other travails. Woof. It's really sad to see, you know, he made it through all of that. He still survived, and that this is the way he passed. But, you know, I gotta believe that that's because he still needed, he wasn't done. He wasn't done here, and he survived through that, all of that. And, you know, I just wish nothing but my deepest condolences to his family, to his loved ones. And, you know, it's one of those deaths that I think a lot of people are taking hard. It's similar to, you know, when Kobe Bryant passed away, that was something visceral that you could feel when we lost him, you know? So I was curious, you know, psychologically, why do we mourn celebrities' deaths? You know, like what is it? And immediately my first thought is, well, we have what I think a lot of you will have heard about, or maybe not, is the idea of parasocial bonds. So that's kind of just come out because of with the birth of social media. Parasocial bonds, and I'm linking this spsp.org. This is from the Society for Personality and Social Psychology, which is the world's largest organization of personality and social psychologists, which I find this whole science very intriguing. But so there are six big reasons, or at least kind of schools of thought. And it can be mourning or grieving a celebrity or somebody in the public eye. It can be a mixture of any and all of these or something else. But kind of the biggest reasons. One, parasocial bonds, is that we feel like we know, we personally build a relationship or connection with somebody we've never met because through social media, we feel like we've watched this. We know them because they're one-way relationships, right? Like Will Smith doesn't know me, but I feel like I know Will Smith, for example. Then there's also the role of nostalgia. You don't necessarily have to have a parasocial bond or connection with a celebrity to feel sad when they pass away, but we also might grieve because of the nostalgia. You know, for instance, Friends, an iconic and central to pop culture TV series for decades. We connect in our brain certain memories or certain parts of our childhood, and they can be anything small, like say you watched Friends while you had breakfast before you went to school, you know, those kinds of things. So we feel like we lose that, and it's kind of grieving that part of our lives or our memories. So it's kind of like losing a younger self, essentially, when it comes to nostalgia. And then another kind of idea is that celebrities dying, and this is quote, celebrities dying reminds us of our own mortality, the role of what they call terror management. So I'm going to read this directly because scientists say it better than myself, go figure. We may also be upset by the deaths of celebrities because their deaths remind us of our own mortality. Terror management theory argues that we all have a fear of dying that we mostly deal with by not thinking about it. But when something pushes our own mortality into our minds, it can be unpleasant. Dr. Eric Wesselman of Illinois State University points out that when celebrities die or are diagnosed with life-threatening illnesses, it is a scary reminder of aging and death. Dr. Samantha Cacace, C-A-C-A-C-E, Cacace. I don't know. Dr. Samantha of North Carolina State University suggests that seeing an idol die can make death seem even more likely for us. Yeah, I can totally see that. I can totally see that. You know, especially when it's someone as famous and well-known as Matthew Perry, where you see it everywhere, the reminders are kind of hard to ignore. And then another one is the role of self-serving bias. So that we are learning that even special people, quote, special people can die and are mortal too. Self-serving bias is seeking out things in your environment to confirm whatever belief or opinion that you hold. You know, for example, social media channels, the algorithms feed you what you interact with or are most likely to stay focused on than anything else, right? So you are just constantly, it's geared so that you're reading things that you usually, it ends this way, I would say 99% of the time, you end up feeding your brain exactly what you already believe. And so I feel like that's how these divisive kind of arguments and controversial topics really get fired up even more, is that we're in these silos. So we exist in these information silos, but we're only reading what we agree with, you know? Just a thought. But so that's self-serving biases, but the way it relates to celebrities dying and our grief with that is that we always want to believe that our world is safe and predictable. And so we then develop kind of illogical views like, oh, that will never happen to me. Celebrities dying makes us feel like everyone is dying. Interesting. The role of the availability heuristic. So, and I'm going to read from this too. Celebrity deaths are also distressing because just a couple of celebrity deaths can make it seem like everyone from our youth is dying. This is due to the availability heuristic. The more easily we can think of examples of something, the more we assume that it happens a lot. For example, the more easily I can think of Beatles songs, the more I will assume that they wrote lots of songs. Okay, so thinks that the same thing can happen when celebrities die. We can easily think of stars from the 90s who have died because their deaths were in the news, but we haven't been thinking about stars from the 90s who haven't died. Thus, dying stars from the 90s are more available in memory than the living stars, which makes us feel like almost everyone we loved in the 90s is dying, which is distressing. That makes sense. Kind of like confirmation bias almost. Similar, same, but different. So there's just tons of psychological reasons. So you're not totally crazy if you actually are grieving or sad by the loss of a celebrity. You know, I see some people writing out there in social medias that it's stupid. But it's not. And there's science to it. So you can hit them with this article, baby. And of course, this will be linked in the show notes. I just found this super interesting. So not to end things on a real fun and perky topic as this, but I found it very interesting and I hope you guys did too. And, you know, spooky, talking about death, but spooky season is closing out, honey. I'm so glad that you joined me today. I hope you found this interesting. Please, please, please give me any and all feedback. I would love to hear it, no matter what it is. Let me know what you enjoyed hearing, what you'd like to hear more of. And we'll see you next week. Go ahead and follow on Instagram at Easily Entertained Pod. Share this with a friend. Share this with anyone who you think might enjoy hearing this podcast. Greatly appreciate it. That's how we keep this baby running. And I will see you next time. As always, love you, homies. Bye.